Okay, is this on? Am I being... No? No? That sounds like it's on now. Okay. Well, thanks for coming, and it's good to be with you in the first workshop. This workshop is the title, I think, is Why Doesn't God Intervene More? And probably there should be a more often at the end of that or something to make it grammatically correct. I'm not sure. But it really follows what Chad Meister was talking about in the previous session, the problem of evil. But particularly the question of why doesn't God intervene more in our lives to prevent what appear to be bad things, evil things from happening? And I want to talk a little bit about why that question has been on my mind recently. And then in some ways, when I heard Chad was doing the problem of evil, and that's what he was going to do for all four of his talks, I said, well, Chad, I kind of wanted to do one on that. Can I do one? And he said, yeah, go ahead. And then I didn't really think through the fact that he would go before me. And so there's some things that I, a little feedback there. Some things that I wanted to say, or that I will say, that he's already touched on a little bit. And I think that's okay, because I think this issue is so so important and so fundamental to our faith as Christians. And certainly, it's an issue that oftentimes the non-Christian world has in mind when they think about why they don't believe in God. And it's oftentimes, this is one of the issues. So let me just open us in a brief word of prayer, and then we'll get started. Father, we do thank you once again for the opportunity we have to gather together like this and spend some time focusing on these kinds of issues. With all the needs in our own lives, the concerns that we have, the busyness, it can be difficult to take time aside and sometimes even seem counterproductive to take time aside for something like this, Lord. But we believe, Father, that when we draw near to you, you draw near to us, and that one of the ways that we can draw near to you is to open ourselves more to your truth and to understand more of what you have for us to understand, so that we can both grow in our own personal lives and also be in a position to help others. So I pray, Lord, that you would multiply the fruit of this investment for each person, that as we each partake of this time, that we would just really sense you using it in our lives, and that your Spirit would be at work in us. And so we pray that for this time in particular in your name. Amen. Well, I used to have a puppy dog, a little brown chocolate lab, and his name was Tegan. Actually, we named him D'Artagnan from the Three Musketeers, but we called him Tegan for short. And I can remember, and he's just a 3-month-old little puppy. I could kind of hold him in my arms. Well, if I had Tegan with me here today, and let's say maybe I had a sharp pencil in my other hand, I'm holding Tegan, and every once in a while I'm talking to you, I just jab him with the pencil, and he yelps, and I pull it out. But because he trusts me, he just stays there. And then a few minutes later, I get him again. Right? And I just keep talking, but every few minutes, I just go ahead and give him a jab. Well, I would imagine that before too long, one of the people here in the front would confront me on this. They'd come up and maybe take Tegan from me. That you wouldn't let me get away with that. Right? Now, it's a dog, and we have some affection for dogs. Some of you are cat people, so maybe you don't have as much affection for dogs, but still, you have some affection. You know the dog's in pain, and if you could, you would do something to intervene, right? And yet we know that God is in a position to intervene in instances of suffering that happen day after day, hour by hour, around the world, and it appears that God doesn't intervene, at least a lot of the time. And yet we all know that we would intervene, even if it was just an animal in pain. And yet there's humans, children, who are going through similar kinds of abuse right now. Right? And if we knew where that was, we would not be here. Right? We would be, if we knew there was some sort of abuse going on right around the corner and we knew that was happening and a child was suffering, we would go, wouldn't we? Right? Chad told the story of this tragic situation where a mother backs out of the driveway over her child. See, if any of us had been walking down the sidewalk that day and we saw what was happening, Mom in minivan, little child behind the minivan. We would have, stop, dolls, you know, and we would have run in from behind the minivan, try to scoop the child up, right? Well, you and I weren't there, and I assume because it happened, no one was there to do that. But God was there. God is all-knowing. He knew what was going on. He's all-powerful. He could have done something to prevent it, as Chad said. Why not just supernaturally just kind of tap the woman on the shoulder, put a little voice in her head, check the rearview mirror, you know, stop the car, change the circumstances. He could have just very easily intervened in the child's life. The child could just all of a sudden not be able to walk forward. God could have done all sorts of things to stop that situation from happening that you and I would have done if we were there. In fact, if you were there and you didn't do that, we would have said, what's wrong with you? You were standing there. You could have stopped it and you just watched it happen. But you see, God was standing there. He had the power. He's good. He's loving. He had the knowledge. And yet, he didn't do it. See, why would we be held in some sense to blame if we didn't stop something like that happening, but somehow God gets off the hook? This is the problem of evil. And there's lots of examples of these kinds of evils that seem to be fairly pointless or fairly gratuitous. And what do we say about these? Because I think Chad is right. The big issue here is not so much what he called the logical problem of evil. The big issue isn't, can we somehow reconcile a good, loving, powerful God with some evil occurring in the world? I think we can. Because of free will, for instance, I think it makes a lot of sense why God would allow people to make choices of their own free volition that are going to end up in negative consequences. They're going to end up in pain and hurt either for that person or for another. And God to give people that kind of free will, which seems to be a great good, right? Because as Chad said, if we didn't have that kind of free will, we'd be robots. We would just do exactly what God wants us to do. But we wouldn't have the freedom to really choose relationship with him or choose to do good to one another. So I think it makes sense that a good God would allow some evil. But why so much evil, and why certain kinds of evil? Why doesn't he intervene more? Why doesn't he stop evil from happening? In my own life, this has become more poignant as of late, and that's really why I wanted to at least say something about it. And partly I wanted to do this as one of my workshops just so that I could think about this again. And I guess I'm grateful to say that the circumstances that have made me ponder this afresh haven't been things that have been going on in my life or my immediate family's life, but there's some very close friends of mine who have been dealing with the problem of evil in the last few months, and it seemed like a wave of these things happened. We have some very, very close friends, probably our closest friends that are a married couple, and they were 8 months pregnant a few months back and expecting a healthy baby boy, and Kimber started to experience some different things going on in her womb, and make a long story short, they lost the child in the last month or so of pregnancy, and she still had to give birth to this child that had already died in her womb, and because of a mistake in the hospital, she didn't get an epidural, so she gave birth, a very painful birth, to a dead child. And as I heard them talk about the trauma of just losing the child, but then having to give birth, and how just through tears, what is normally a very happy experience. And I'm sure if we went around this room, we could hear testimony after testimony of this case of these kinds of things that are just so gut-wrenching. And for my two friends, it's been several months now, and they're still dealing with, and in various ways, dealing with, where was God in this? Why did he allow this? And I want to reflect a little bit about their case in a moment. Shortly thereafter, just a few months later, some other close friends of ours, in their early 30s, she is the wife, and her name's Amy. She's in her early 30s. They have two young children, 4 and 6, I believe, and she was having headaches and passed out in the home and ended up in the hospital. And she has a malignant brain tumor. It's a very aggressive form of cancer, and even best case scenario, maybe 2 years to live. Now we're praying that God gives her many more years. But just, you know, seemingly out of the blue, a very young family, a family that's thriving, and now they're facing this situation where Amy looks like she very well may not be here too many more years. Right in the same few months, another good friend of mine, young daughter, he walked into his daughter's bedroom. His daughter's about 3 years old, and caught a neighborhood boy sexually molesting his three-year-old daughter. And see, once again, it's, well, God, why didn't you intervene in those situations? You know, why couldn't my friend have shown up a few minutes earlier so that this abuse hadn't taken place, right? But he was just a few minutes too late, a few minutes too late. And there was a wave of these things that kind of came across my plate in a matter of months. And once again, I just mention them because I can only assume that they're representative of 100 more stories that you all know for yourself or your loved ones or people in your church or your relatives. And so this problem of evil is a serious problem for us as Christians because it's something we have to deal with, whether it's in our own life to one degree or another or in other people's lives. Now, let me just say this by way of getting started, and once again, Chad mentioned this point. It just deserves to be reiterated. There really are two different problems of evil. He mentioned the emotional problem of evil, and I don't know what he called the more, you know, either logical or philosophical. But oftentimes I make the distinction between the philosophical or intellectual problem of evil, and this is where we kind of sit back and philosophize or intellectualize about how can we reconcile a perfectly good God, an all-powerful God, an all-knowing God with evil. How could God allow these things to happen? Okay, so that's an intellectual problem. But the experiential problem of evil, or what Chad called the emotional problem of evil, this is when we are in the throes of evil. We are in a situation where we are really crying out to God, Lord, this doesn't make sense. What are you doing? And the last thing we need when we're in that kind of existential situation is for someone to come philosophize to us and talk about some sort of philosophical consideration about how evil's really justified because of free will, and let me try to explain this to you, right? The last thing we need in those situations is some sort of intellectual answer to an emotional or existential problem. What we really need is for someone to put their arm around us and say, I know it hurts, and just be with us, and be like Job's friends, at least for the first part of their ministry to Job, where they just sat there, right, in the ashes. We need that. When my friends Dennis and Kimber had this stillbirth, I think a couple days after they came back from the hospital, a group of us just gathered. We didn't know what else to do, so we just gathered on their front lawn, and we lit some candles, and we stood outside, and we just prayed, and we sat there, and we were there. You know, we said, "You guys don't need to come out. That's not what we're looking for. We just want to be here. We want you to know that we're trying to be in this with you." And when someone's going through the midst of dealing with evil in their life, that's what they need. And I assume to one degree or another, many of us are going through the midst of this kind of issue. And so to some degree, I would say, what I'm about to say isn't what you really need. It's what you really need if you're in the midst of dealing and wrestling with how did God allow something to happen in my life, whether it's something that recently happened or something that happened long ago. What I'm about to say is probably not really what you need. You probably just need someone to sit with you and hear the pain and feel that pain with you and share that burden with you. And we could try to do that in a group this large, but that's probably not the best way to do it. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about some of the intellectual issues. I do think there's a time and a place for those, and I think the person who's dealing with the loss or the tragedy, they're the only one who's really in a position to say when they're ready to go to that place. Of they might ask the question, well, what was God doing, or why did God allow this? But that still may be an emotional question. They're really not ready to try to figure out an answer. And oftentimes I don't think there is an answer, but to even talk about perhaps what God was doing. So only you or the person you're ministering to can really decide when they're ready. And oftentimes that takes a lot of wisdom and counsel. Also, I should say before I get going here, I do want to leave some time at the end here for some questions and feedback. I don't have my schedule in front of me. Are we supposed to end at 10 o'clock or at 11 o'clock? Is that the... Okay, we're supposed to end at 11 o'clock, and the next session starts 11:10. Okay, so I'll try to leave the last 10 minutes for some interaction. So if you have some thoughts or questions that come up as we're going along here, feel free to jot those down, because I do want to give you a chance to respond. So, once again, the issue I'm really dealing with here is what Chad referred to as the evidential problem of evil. It's not the logical problem of evil. I agree with Chad that the logical problem of evil is there a logical contradiction between a good God and evil? No. I think that he's right. Most people have agreed. There's not a logical contradiction. Sure, a good God could allow evil in this world because there are good purposes for it, and free will is the one that we normally talk about. But then the issue gets pushed to another issue of, well, the reason why we call it the evidential problem is do we really think there's so, well, I'll put it this way, there's so much evil in the world and of such a kind that seems so pointless, then do we really have, or doesn't that count as evidence against God's existence? And that's why it's called the evidential problem of evil, that all of the evil in the world, it just seems too much, right? So I'm a father of a 2-year-old boy, and you know, you realize when you're parenting children, right, that you have to allow your child to suffer a little bit, right? I can remember my son when he was, so this was when he's just about, oh, I don't know, maybe right around 8 months or 7 months or something. He could crawl, but he, and maybe he was even walking at this point. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, he was just starting to walk. And we have, in our house, we have these, a sunken living room. And so there's just these two little stairs that go into our living room. And it's, you know, kind of a major part of our house. So you couldn't put a gate up or anything. So my little, 1-year-old or whatever he was at that time would walk up in his very halting kind of, you know, just learning to walk way, and he'd get to those two stairs, right? And he couldn't have handled those two stairs at that. He wasn't able to walk well enough. And so we were trying to teach him to turn around, get down on his hands and knees, and crawl down backwards, right? And so every time he'd get to the stairs, you know, either myself or Alicia would kind of rush over there and make sure he was going to get down. And we're trying to train him that that's what he needed to do to get down the stairs. Well, he wasn't a very quick learner on that. And so he would try to kind of walk down the stairs, right? And so, you know, I would still try. But every once in a while, I wouldn't intervene quite as much. And I would just, because I wanted him to experience a little bit, not a complete face plant, but I wanted him to experience a little bit of the consequences of what it would be like if he decided to walk down those stairs. Because every time he tried, we would always stop him, and we'd intervene, and we would help him down. And so he never really learned about gravity. He thought, he lived in a world in which when he's about to fall, mom and dad are there, you know, and we were pretty on top of it. And by and large, I think that's the way mom and dads should be. But every once in a while, you have to let go a little bit, right? If you're always there when your child's learning to walk, to always catch him or her when she's falling, they won't learn to walk. They're gonna not learn to balance. You have to let them teeter and whatnot. So we give a little room, right? Well, certainly a good heavenly Father is allowed to give us a little room sometimes to fail, and it's going to hurt. There's going to be pain. And so he gives us a little room. So there's no logical contradiction. Certainly a good God can allow some evil. But see, if I just let my son, you know, walk off the roof or something, right? You would say, well, okay, I understand how fathers have some latitudes with their sons. But why do that? There's no lesson in that, right? Or if my wife and I just decide we're going to take off for the weekend and leave our 1-year-old at home and, you know, put some baby food out or something. No, 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 right? That's too much evil. There's too many consequences, okay? So that's the difference between the logical problem of evil and what's called the evidential problem of evil. Logical problem of evil says, is there some way that evil makes sense if God is good? Yeah, just as there's some way that some sort of negative consequences make sense even with good parents. But it looks like human life is such that there's far too much evil. It's the kind of stuff that if parents let things like this happen to their kids, we would take their kids away from them. And it looks like God lets things happen to human persons, his children, that he should be held responsible for. Well, what do we do with that? Well, I want to mention a few points, and similar to Chad did, I have several points. I actually have a few more than what he mentioned. And if I didn't have to stay tied to this microphone, I might use that whiteboard over there. But because I'm afraid you wouldn't be able to hear me very well if I kept moving over there, I'll just list these out. And if you're taking notes, I'll try to make it clear when I'm on to a new point. So the question is, why doesn't God intervene more? And the first point of response is that God can't intervene all the time. God can't intervene all the time. And why not? Well, I mean, certainly he could, but what would be the consequence if God intervened all the time and kept anything bad from ever happening? Well, if God intervened all the time and stopped any bad thing from happening, we wouldn't have free will. We wouldn't live in a cause and effect universe where if you decide to do something that's going to have negative consequences, those negative consequences come about. If God always intervened every time someone's about ready to turn their car into the next lane and there's another car there, right? If God always intervened, guess what would happen? We'd never look. We'd never look in our side view mirrors because anytime we change lanes, it always turns out to be fine, right? Because God always intervenes. Now, we wouldn't understand why it is, but see, if God always intervened, anytime anyone was about ready to get in a car accident, no one would really pay attention when they drive, would they? Because you wouldn't have to. It'd be a world in which everything always went fine no matter what you did. Okay? It'd kind of be a crazy world, wouldn't it? Because, you know, right now I intervene when my son picks up his train track or whatever it is and starts swinging it at me or someone else. I say, hey, stop, right? Because I need to let him learn that there's consequences for those actions. And so I have to stop him. But in a world in which there are no consequences, we would let our kids play with knives. They could come at us with knives. And I don't know what God would do, but maybe the knives would turn to rubber, right? Or they could jump off the roof and they wouldn't get hurt. We would live in a crazy universe if God always intervened. We wouldn't know really how to be morally responsible people if God always intervened anytime anything bad was going to happen. Okay? We wouldn't know so many things we know. We wouldn't know what it means to be malnourished, because if nothing bad ever happened, even if you didn't eat enough food, you wouldn't be malnourished, right? God would intervene. If someone sexually abused their child, nothing bad would happen. They'd be fine because God would intervene. There wouldn't be any consequences for actions. Now you might say, well, why wouldn't God intervene to stop the sexual abuse or stop the malnutrition? Well, then, once again, there'd be no free will. No matter what we did, everything would be fine. It would be a crazy universe in which we wouldn't know how to behave in order to flourish as human persons, because no matter what we did, it would always turn out everything's okay. And so God allows the consequences of our actions, whether positive or negative, to run their course so that we can learn that, oh, smoking causes cancer. That's good to know. We wouldn't have known that if God had always intervened. Oh, when you don't feed your child enough food, they get malnourished. That's good to know. Oh, when you don't emotionally bond with your child at a young age, they're going to have developmental problems. Oh, that's good to know. Right? We learn a great deal about human life and how to live responsibly in this world because God allows negative consequences to happen. We learned that drug abuse is a horrible thing because we see what happens to people when they get hooked on drugs, right? And so there's so much that we learn about how to live life well and how to live life right by seeing negative consequences that if God took all those negative consequences away, the world would be a crazy place. We wouldn't know how to be morally responsible, and we wouldn't have true freedom. We could just do whatever we wanted. Okay? And so the first reason I think we have for thinking or answering the question, why doesn't God intervene more, is just to say, well, he can't intervene all the time. He has to allow some bad things to happen in order for us to live in a cause and effect universe where if we do this, this happens. If we do this, this happens. Right? And that's how we value. The reason why we value heroism, when someone jumps into the ocean to save the drowning person, is because if they didn't do it, the person would drown. But see, in a world in which God intervenes, they wouldn't have drowned. So don't jump in, right? Somehow God will take care of it, or somehow it would be taken care of. So the reason why we value the heroic action is because we know the consequence. We know what would happen if someone didn't do that, right? And so God holds back his interventions to give us room to grow, to give us room to be free, to give us room to learn how to be responsible. But now you still might say, well, why does he hold back so much? Why isn't he a little more involved? Well, you see, that's a very interesting question. See, how much can God intervene and still leave us in a world that has, by and large, kind of regular law-like reactions, right? That when I do this, this happens, and I do this, this happens. Because the second point I would raise is God, the first one's God can't intervene all the time, but the second point is that God does intervene. God does intervene. Now, the interesting thing about when God does intervene and stops bad things from happening is that we don't know it usually because it didn't happen. Right? I mean, how many car accidents, would I have been in if God hadn't intervened? I don't know. Sometimes when I realize that I don't pay a lot of attention sometimes when I go through certain intersections, I think, one of these days, you know, I'm going to learn a lesson here, right? Because I'm probably not paying as careful attention as I should. I've kind of taken it for granted that 9 times out of 10, when I drive through this uncontrolled intersection, there's no other cars coming. But I think, what if it's one of those times where someone's going to fly through, right? And so we have to live in a world in which, more often than not, things go the way they go in a cause and effect universe, where if you don't pay attention, you're going to get in a car accident. Otherwise, if God always intervened, we would, once again, just begin to think that we don't need to pay attention when we drive, right? So God does intervene, but he can only intervene so much. Because if he intervenes too much, then we, once again, we lose free will, we lose moral responsibility. But I assume, because he is loving, because he is good, because he is powerful, that he does intervene a lot. We hear about, you know, thousands of children starved to death in certain parts of the world. Well, how many more thousands would have starved to death except God was at work in various ways that we are not even aware of? We hear about the 33 people who were killed at Virginia Tech. Well, I'm sure we're going to hear more and more stories about people who weren't killed because of various circumstances that if they had just been there at that time, and you think, well, what about those 33 that were? Well, yes, that's tragic, and I don't know if we can explain why God allowed 33, but maybe there would have been 66, right? We don't know. We don't know all the ways that God does intervene to curtail evil in our daily lives. So that would be my second point, is that God does, he has intervened. My third point is one that Chad mentioned. I want to mention it again, though, is that we have a limited perspective. We have a limited perspective when it comes to figuring out either why God doesn't intervene or why he's allowed something to happen. We have a limited perspective on that. We're only looking at it from a very narrow point of view. See, God sees everything. Did you ever hear about the book, The Five People You Meet When You Get to Heaven? It's a book by Mitch Albom that came out a few years back, and he was the writer of Tuesdays with Maury, who I think was even more of a bestseller. But I read this little book, Five People You Meet When You Get to Heaven. They made it into a TV show, actually, and the book was better than the TV show, as often is the case. But it was a story about a fictitious story. I don't think heaven's like this, but you know, who knows? But that when you get to heaven, you meet five people, and there are five people who your life impacted. And it was interesting because the main character in the story dies and he goes to heaven. And he thought his life, I mean, he ended his life as a carnival worker on a pier, in California somewhere, running rides, right? A ride operator. And he thought he had wasted his life, okay? And so he dies and he meets these five people and he finds out how his life had meaning and how tragedies in his life had meaning that he never knew about. Because they affected somebody who affected somebody who affected somebody who affected somebody, and somewhere down the line, a very good thing came out of his life that he had no way of knowing in his earthly life. And so he meets these five people in heaven, and even the most horrendous thing he thought he'd ever done, which was something he did in, I think, the Vietnam War or something, where he had ended up mistakenly burning down a house where a young girl was in it. It had plagued him his whole life. Well, that young girl meets him in heaven. And yes, she had died. And yes, she had been burned. But she basically goes on to bless him and talk about the goodness that came through this horrible act that he committed. Right? And it was a very interesting meditation on the way in which our lives might be, and our suffering might be impacting people that we have no clue of, because we have a very limited perspective. You've heard about chaos theory? I don't know much about chaos theory, but there was a commercial running a while back that was kind of built on chaos theory. I don't even remember what the commercial was for, which is probably a sign that it wasn't a very good commercial in terms of marketing, whatever they were trying to market. But I think it started out with showing a butterfly flapping its wings in the Amazon jungle. And it said, you know, the butterfly flapping its wings in the Amazon jungle changes the atmospheric pressure, which causes the tree to do something, which causes, and eventually it led to some hurricane, you know, in over in the Caribbean someplace that led to this. And talking about how if you were in the Amazon jungle and you saw the butterfly flap its wings, you would never guess that that's going to end up in a hurricane 7 months later, right? But chaos theory says small, minute events that are very limited can actually have a ripple effect and end up causing something that we would never dream of, right? Well, there's something right about that. See, these small, minute events sometimes in our lives and other lives, generations down the line, have ripple effects. And we just don't know. My friends Jeff and Amy, Amy's been diagnosed with this terminal brain cancer. It's amazing, and this has only been maybe 4 months now, but it's amazing how the ripple effects of her diagnosis have already been seen in people's lives. Because, you know, when something like that happens to you or to someone you know, it wakes you up, doesn't it? All of a sudden you think, what am I doing? What is life about? What am I living for? And for myself, I found myself valuing my wife and my son and just valuing life so much more. And I don't know how her illness, how it's going to affect me and how that little bit of energy or something kind of woke me up a little bit to what am I doing? What life's about? I don't know what that's going to do to who I might impact, right? And so there might be testimony after testimony of people somewhere down the line who have been impacted by my friend Amy's brain cancer who you wouldn't even be able to make the connection hardly. Right? We just don't know how our suffering is oftentimes a testimony and an impact on people that we have no clue of. I think about my friends I mentioned earlier, Dennis and Kimber, and I need to be careful, this is taped, and hopefully, because I don't think my friend Dennis is ready to hear this. Okay, but they lost their child in the 8th month of pregnancy. But I have seen some ways in which that has impacted Dennis that are phenomenal. Now, I would never say it was a good thing that that happened. That's the interesting thing about God bringing good out of evil. It's very seldom we'd ever say that we're glad the evil thing happened. But we do see how, as in the story of Joseph, what man meant for evil, God meant for good. And I've seen in my friend Dennis's life some character changes have taken place in him because he was humbled by this event. He was humbled by it. And he said this. He said, I used to kind of walk around thinking a little bit with some arrogance, thinking that life goes pretty good for me and things go my way and bad stuff like this doesn't happen to me. And I experienced that arrogance. It was a part of his character that wasn't very attractive. And this event has really humbled him. In his words, he said, it kind of took the chip off my shoulder. Now, I don't think he's quite ready to hear or to accept himself that there's been some redemption of this evil thing. I don't think he's quite ready for that. But he's seen it in his life. I'm seeing it in his life. And so oftentimes we have a very limited perspective of how God might bring goodness out of evil. Paul talks about this in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Verse 7 through 18. We won't turn there right now, but he talks about, he mentions our light and momentary afflictions. Our light and momentary afflictions, he says, compared to an eternal weight of glory. And basically what he's saying is there's, you know, he talks about how we're perplexed, but we're not crushed. You know, that bad things are happening to us, but it doesn't crush us because he says these light and momentary afflictions that we have in life are preparing for us an eternal weight of glory. And from the perspective of eternity, we'll look back on our life and say, oh, oh, now I see, right? And once again, I don't think it'll be, I'm glad that evil thing happened. I think evil is evil. And it's always evil. But we will see how God took the negative, the bad things in our lives, and in our lives, and maybe this is going to be the really hard thing, at least from this side of heaven, that in other people's lives, good came of it. See, Amy might be willing to bear her cancer if she knew that ultimately it would be for the better for her, right? But one of the things that we might have to deal with is that sometimes our suffering might ultimately be for the good of other people, that other people might benefit from our suffering, maybe even more than we benefit from it. That's really selfless, right? So God can't intervene all the time. He has intervened. We have a limited perspective under which to view what he's doing and why he doesn't intervene. And then this is really a point I've kind of already been making, but point four, is this point four? Yeah. Perhaps God's interventions are overrated. Perhaps God's interventions are overrated. And what I mean by that is kind of the point I've been making under the limited perspective is that by God not intervening, oftentimes good things happen that otherwise wouldn't have happened. By God allowing evil and suffering in our lives and in others' lives, good things do oftentimes happen. And as Chad was saying, it takes some patience and it takes some humility to be open to those good things. Because at least in the moment, we just want the suffering to go away. We just want the bad thing not to have happened. We want the tragedy not to have happened. And it takes some patience and what Scripture would call perseverance to endure for a while and say, okay, Lord, I don't know what you're doing here, but we've been down this road before. And I've seen how some things that I just thought were so horrible turned out okay. And you were able to wrap them into the overall story of my life. And now I say, okay, Lord, I see what you're doing there. I see why you allowed it. By the way, I don't think God causes these things. I don't think God is ever the author of evil. I think he allows them. So I do think he has some responsibility. Just like if you're walking down the street and the mother is backing out over her child, you didn't cause it to happen, but if you could stop it, you have some responsibility. So I do think he has responsibility because he could intervene, right? But that doesn't mean he causes it. And sometimes we run around with this view that God is making bad things happen to us to punish us. Now, he does bring trials sometimes, but I think even oftentimes with trials, he's allowing things that are already going to happen because of other people's choices. It could be spiritual warfare. But he's allowing things to happen to us, and he's allowing it to happen, but he's not causing it. And I think that's an important point. But perhaps God's interventions are overrated. I wanted to read just a brief quote from a book by a guy named John Stackhouse. This book is actually a book that, if you're interested in this issue, the problem of evil, it's a book worth reading. It's well titled, I think. It's Can God Be Trusted? So I think for the Christian, for the non-Christian as well, that's ultimately the issue when it comes to the problem of evil, is can we trust God? Can we trust God that we can really put our life in his hands and things might happen, he might allow things to happen that I don't want them to have happen, but can I trust him that even if those things happen, he'll be in it with me and there will be redemption. So can God be trusted? He talks about, and it's by John Stackhouse, who's a professor up at Regent College in Vancouver, British Columbia. He says, I reflect on the fact that my own grandmother had multiple sclerosis for decades. Oh, by the way, yeah, another friend's wife was diagnosed with MS. That was another one that happened right in that same period. I reflect on the fact that my own grandmother had MS for decades, yet she did not seem to need such a terrible pressure on a soul that was, from my viewpoint at least, already sweet and strong. He's basically saying, my grandmother had MS, and you might say, well, God kind of meant that for her good, but he's saying she was already a pretty good person before she had MS, so why is God giving her MS? It seems quite unlikely to me that my grandmother's spiritual state required the regimen of this much suffering, right? My grandfather, however, has testified with tears that having to retire before his time and care for my grandmother for 2 decades before her eventual death changed him a great deal and entirely for the better. Moreover, the rest of the family has noticed the positive change and are themselves different because of it, the positive change in their grandfather. In ever-widening circles of influence that Christians believe make a difference for eternity. Furthermore, if we consider things from my grandmother's side, those of us who knew her could well believe her capable of choosing to endure great suffering if it meant much lasting blessing for her beloved husband and family, had God given her that choice. So basically saying sometimes bad things happen to people is kind of the point I was making earlier. He doesn't intervene. His intervention would be overrated. We'd say, save grandma from her MS. And here, well, see, if God intervened and saved grandma from her MS, grandpa wouldn't have been changed. And the ripple effects of grandpa being changed have now been a blessing to generations of this family. And so grandma had to endure suffering, if one way of looking at this, not for her own benefit, but for her husband's benefit and for her family's benefit. And he says, I think grandma was the kind of person who would have said, okay, you know, sign me up. You know, and as I say these things, I'm moved emotionally. This is where the logical or philosophical problem of evil and the emotional problem of evil come really close together, because it's in some sense, it's moving to think about this, but it's also difficult. It's challenging. I don't know if I could stand up to that kind of suffering. Let me make one last point, and then I'm going to stop for questions. There's actually three more points I was going to make, but I'm going to stop with this last one. So why doesn't God intervene? Well, Mother Teresa actually helped me with this point. This is a little bit longer one. I'll state it and then I'll explain it. Suffering is not the greatest evil. Suffering is not the greatest evil. But it does bring about the opportunity for the greatest good. Suffering is not the greatest evil. But it does bring about the opportunity for the greatest good. Say it one more time. Suffering is not the greatest evil, but it does bring about the opportunity for the greatest good. Mother Teresa, in a little book that was written after her death, made the point that the greatest evil is not suffering. The greatest evil is suffering alone. The greatest evil is not suffering. The greatest evil is suffering alone. And, of course, her mission in Calcutta, India, was based on that basic principle of these people are dying in the streets because they're the low man on the totem pole in the caste system, and we can't cure them. We don't have the medicine. They're in the latter stages of death, but here's what we can do. We can bring them off the street, give them a clean place to lie down, and we can hold their hand while they die. And Mother Teresa thought that was an important enough ministry that even if we can't cure them of their sickness, even if we can't keep them alive, they don't have to die and suffer alone. And there's something about that that strikes me as very true. The greatest evil is not suffering. The greatest evil is to suffer alone. And so the greatest evil is something that we can do something about. That is, we can be with people when they suffer. Right? And so, yes, God allows suffering, but the greatest evil is when we allow people to suffer alone. And that's something that can be dealt with, whether we're the one suffering or whether we're the one in the opportunity to be with someone who's suffering. Because if we're the one suffering and you're suffering alone, well, you can do something about that. You can say, please, someone, be with me. Right? And find someone who will. And certainly if you're the one who's in the position to walk with someone when they're suffering, then the greatest evil can be taken care of. And you know what's amazing is when you walk with someone in those deep places of suffering, there's something very redemptive in that, isn't there? Have you ever been with someone and walked alongside them? It's very painful, but there you can actually experience joy in the midst of great pain when you're with someone in their darkest moments. That's a very great good. There's a very great good in being met in a very deep place of suffering with another. Right? And Mother Teresa went on to make this point, and this is an often quoted interaction, but a reporter asked Mother Teresa, where is God when a baby dies alone in a Calcuttan alley? Where is God when a baby dies alone in a Calcuttan alley? And Mother Teresa replied, God is there suffering with that baby. The question is, where are you? The question is, where are you? And I think that turns the problem of evil on its head a bit and kind of shifting from where is God when evil occurs? Well, where are we when evil occurs? And not so much to prevent it, but to be with people in the midst of it, to walk with them through it. Because the greatest evil, I think Mother Teresa's right, is not suffering, it's to suffer alone. And so the greatest evil is something that doesn't have to happen. We don't have to be alone in the midst of our suffering. And if you find yourself alone in the midst of your suffering, you need to find some people who can be with you in it. And if you find yourself in this time of life being with people who are in great suffering, don't make the fatal mistake of thinking they need their space. They don't need space. Even if they tell you they need space, rush into their lives, show up on their front lawn, and just sit there and say, when you're ready to come out, I'm here. Right? Call them, bug them. You know, you don't force yourself on them, but let them know you're there. Because I think it's a very dangerous idea that somehow people in pain just need some time to be alone. No. They need to be with people. They may not realize that yet, so don't force it on them. But make sure they know that you're there so that when they come to the point where they want someone, they know you're available. And I think too many times I think, well, you know, I'm not going to call them because, you know, probably a lot of people are calling them right now. I'm not going to, you know, maybe it, they might really want to come over for dinner, but who knows, they might not. I just won't bother asking. No, Steve, call, ask. They can say no, right? But try to be there. Okay, enough said about that. Questions, thoughts, comments? Yes. No, I didn't. Let me hold off on that. Let's just see if there's a couple, if there's any other comments or questions, because it would take me a couple seconds. Yeah, but I'll try to come back to that.
Does God desire our prayers for intervention and answer them and change his mind as he did in the Old Testament today?
Uh-huh. Sounded like there were about three questions in that question. The first one's the easiest. Does God desire our prayers for intervention? I think so. Yeah, I think Scripture makes that clear. To make prayers and supplications and make our requests known to God. Does he change his mind? Of course, there's deep theological issues there that might get me into trouble if I try to walk into that. But I guess my basic answer, and I think you're probably looking for something a lot more deeper than that and kind of work this out, but no, my own view is yes, that God does respond to our prayers. How he responds to our prayers is kind of the issue of theological issue, but he does respond, he does intervene. He does intervene on his own accord, I think, and he intervenes in response to our prayers. In fact, probably my view would be that God intervenes when he sees fit to intervene, and sometimes he invites us to be a part of the process by allowing us to pray for and beseech him for something that is already good. And whether we've convinced him to do something that he wouldn't have otherwise done, if it's good to do, I think God's going to do it. So how prayer works in that sense does, you know, become an interesting theological issue. But my basic answer is, yeah, I think he does desire our prayers, and I think he does change his mind or change his interventions based on our prayers.
Can I elaborate on
Sure.
question?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm going through the Old Testament, mm-hmm. and I just read the prayer that one of the kings asked while he was sick, and mm-hmm. God said, I mean, I think God in his mercy mm-hmm. will allow answers to a prayer mm-hmm. that may be fulfilled in the lifetime of that individual, and he may just delay something that he has already said will happen mm-hmm. in that line.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, mm-hmm. that is...
Yeah.
It's not that he's going to possibly change what he has already said he's going to do, mm-hmm. but the prayers mm-hmm. of a heart really repentant and
yeah.
turned back to God
yeah.
will delay
yeah.
something.
Sure. Yeah. That's helpful. Thank you. And did you have another? Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I think, I mean, that seems to be the way my prayers often go, is kind of the prayer of the Garden of Gethsemane. Not, here's my will, Lord. My will is that you would take my friend Amy's cancer away, but not my will, but yours be done, because I don't know all of what you're up to, and I certainly wouldn't want you to to take the cancer away if that means that some other great good that you have in store, you know. And that's another point. You mentioned one point. One of the points I would have made is our distorted values. This would be another point. We have distorted values when it comes to weighing what is good and what is bad. You know, I look at my friend Amy's cancer and I say, horrible. It's going to be horrible for her kids. It's going to be horrible for her husband. It's going to be horrible for her if she dies. Horrible. Evil. Right? Well, my values are a little distorted. I don't see all of what would be good. And it's not just limited perspective, but even my values. Because now, and this gets touchy, but I just want to present the idea that God is looking at that situation. He sees the true values of that situation. See, I see her two young children, and I think, well, there's no possible way that their mother dying would ever work for good in their life. It's a tragedy. Well, it is a tragedy, but maybe God values something even more in her children's lives than them having their mother. And maybe something about them not having their mother is actually going to be a great good either in their life or their children's lives. I mean, we've heard of many, many people who lost their parents at a young age, and that does something to them. Now, negatively, oftentimes, but we've also heard of people that challenges them in a way. They become something they wouldn't have otherwise become, right? And so we just don't know. We approach these situations oftentimes with distorted values, and we don't know what is really good and what is really bad in many situations. Now, we need to be careful of that. So I don't think we ever want to call evil good. I think there is something evil about someone having brain cancer and dying a premature death. There's something evil about that, but yet I don't totally know all of the values that could come from that or all of the ways that God looks at that. And so we have oftentimes a distorted framework that we approach things from, and that's an important point that I could expand on, but we're running out of time. But yeah, another question. Open to which idea?
Open to them, you helping them.
Yeah. I think we just need to respectfully be there. And I think there's a way to be rebuffed and to be told, I don't want you, and still communicate, well, I hear you and I respect that, but I'm still here. And so, for instance, in a situation I'm in right now, I'm trying to help someone who's going through a difficult time, and they've kind of rebuffed me and some of my other friends. And one of my friends kind of took it personally, and he said, you know, for what it's worth, this is what he said. He said, you know, I invited myself over for dinner, and he said he didn't want me to come over for dinner, and so I'm just not going to ask anymore. And I thought, well, first of all, you're inviting yourself over for dinner, but second of all, even if they said they didn't want you to come over, don't stop. You know, don't have a. This isn't a time to have a fragile ego. Just come back and say, well, if you ever want to have me over for dinner, I'm here, you know, or if you want to go over to dinner at our house. So respectfully be there and try to communicate in various ways that I'm here for you. I hear what you're saying. You're not open to me kind of sharing this burden with you. But if you ever are, I want you to know that, and you can email them, leave voicemail messages, and just somehow communicate. It's going to have to be something that they experience from you. And so you can do various things, but my hunch is that if you're truly available, at some level they will experience that, okay, this person is here for me, they do care, and if and when they become open to that, they'll hopefully give you a call. So.
Yesterday you covered about unfairness objections.
Yeah, next session.
This next session?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I should have made that clear. Yeah, next session. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Right. And yes, because that would have been another one of my points. And it's a point Chad made, that this idea that pain is God's megaphone to rouse a deaf world. If God always intervened, we would have the sense that everything's okay. We wouldn't have a sense that, yes, there's a problem in the world. Things don't go. I mean, one of the things that Virginia Tech does for our nation and for our world is it wakes us up that there's something wrong. Things are not going how they should be going. And then you have to ask the question, well, what's wrong? And that could very easily lead to questions about God and is there someone outside of us and what is life about? And so these kind of events, they wake us up. You know, there's no atheists in foxholes because war wakes people up that what is life about? And my friends are dying all around me. You know, thousands of people have died in Iraq. If, you know, one of the, whatever you think of the war, one of the things that that does is it sobers people. War is sobering. And so some good can come out of that. Okay, we're going to have to end with that because you got 5 minutes before your next session. Thanks for your questions, and look forward to talking to you more. You can, yes.
Take it this happen.